Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 156 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Al.
And I'm Anton. And it's so great to have you. How are you doing?
I'm back. I'm doing well. I'm slightly jet-lagged. So if during the recording I suddenly start talking in a weirder than usual fashion, then just blame the jet lag. But no, I had a great time being away on holiday. I actually got a chance to listen to a couple of NSUKP episodes.
Nice.
The ones I wasn't in, and I was kind of taken aback. You were nice about me. That's not how we do this.
I mean, we can fix that.
When one of us goes away, we're meant to be mean.
We can easily fix that. I mean, I was going to say that we'll know that you're jet lagged when you start speaking sense, but you know, we'll just leave that to one side and be nice to each other for once. But you had a good trip.
I did indeed. And it was quite nice because I got a chance to play a bit of Switch. Although weirdly, I played far less than I was expecting to. I took all my games with me, every single one, with grand plans of sitting on the airplane beside my other half. And we were like, oh, we'll play a bit Mario Golf. We'll play some Mario Party. We'll do all this kind of stuff on the Switch. I played Kirby and that's it. I spent most of my time weirdly reading. I don't know why. I watched some movies. I read a lot. I only played Kirby. And I kind of got frustrated because I discovered when you try and play games when you're jet lagged, like, playing games at sort of 5 in the morning when your body is very confused, your reaction times are not great. Yeah, it doesn't go well when you're trying to do boss fights when you need to have quite good timing. I got quite frustrated and didn't actually play nearly as much as I wanted to because my body wouldn't let me.
Oh, well, there we are. I mean, Anton, you've now finished 100% at Kirby, right?
Indeed. And
I see what you did there.
It gets a lot more open, it gets a lot more challenging, Al. So, yeah, if you're enjoying it already, I think you're going to enjoy it even more as you get through it.
It is good. It's just sweet and nice at this stage. Actually, if it gets difficult and challenging, I might get grumpy. But for now, I'm just enjoying the simplicity and naivety, I guess, of the whole thing. It's just such a wonderful experience. But at the same time, a bit of challenge wouldn't go amiss. So, yeah, looking forward to exploring that in a bit more depth. What have you guys been playing in my absence?
Well, Anton, let's go to you first. What have you played this week?
Once again, I returned to the land of retroness. I've been using / playing the Bandai Wonderswan console from 1999 or 2000. Nevertheless, we've got a full episode of the prequel on it, so do give that a gander. NSUKP/support-us. We have a page on there, going over our Patreon shows. That's one of them. Nevertheless, been playing that. I tried doing a little bit of Horobots, which is apparently an RPG. So didn't get very far in that, as it's Japanese. And I don't read that yet. However, Gunpei only had shapes, so I got further in that. Gunpei being the creator of the Bandai Wonderswan that passed away during the lifespan of the console. And this is a kind of tribute to him as the creator of both the Game Boy and the Wonderswan. A puzzle game is somehow a noble tribute. And it's a fairly fun one. You basically play it in the Wonder Boy's vertical state and you basically line up these shapes to make lines that go across the screen horizontally. It's quite a fun, chill game. It had a DS port and a PSP port, but I haven't seen or touched any of those. I might try and pick up a DS one because I'm feeling like giving that console a go, but that has been my week in gaming.
Nice.
It's been black and white.
Very good. I'm surprised Al hasn't commented on the fact that we're both in the same studio yet, to be honest.
I mean, I was sitting here mildly amused at Anton, and I was thinking, I wonder if I can grab a screenshot of your background and do the same thing. it's great. Everyone's in Mike's studio, but separately.
Yeah, just for those listening and not watching the podcast right now, we have two of my studios, because Anton last week took a screenshot and managed to sort of create himself into my... I don't know how he does it, but it's very cool anyway, I'm sure.
Magic.
I'm sure that Al will manage. In fact, I think Anton might be sharing it with Al now, so that we're all in the same studio. And it's a mess right now as well, which doesn't help. Not a lot, actually. Mario Party, because we had friends. I had a friend of mine, Charlotte, up. She was up staying with us last weekend, and we've got someone else staying with us now. So we played some Mario Party last weekend, which was great fun. I forgot to mention that last week. A lot more Overcooked as well. And I'm still craving time to play a single player, but I'm hoping that will be in the coming week. And it hasn't happened yet, but it will. Al, we have a new Patreon, am I right?
We do, in the form of a wonderful chap called Michael Gallagher. Can we give him a big woohoo?
Woo-hoo!
Woohoo! Woohoo!
I'm Michael Gallagher. Good name, by the way, Michael. Fantastic. So, yeah, no, that's great. Huge thanks to all our Patreons. If you want to sign up, as Anton mentioned, it's www.nsukp.co.uk/support-us. You get all the details. Al's just arrived in my studio. Looks of things. You can tell it's taken last week because there's a spectrum to your left-hand side. Well, as I'm looking at you, to your right-hand side, Al, as is with Anton, but it's not here in my shot, which is quite funny. So yes, not a huge amount, but some multiplayers and things, and come and join us in the Patreon. You can see what everyone else is playing in our Discord. There's a whole bunch of extra stuff that you can get as well. It's all very, very fun and exciting. We've got another mug coming soon as well. That's going to be exciting too. And yeah, it's all just good fun. And Al, before we do get started, anything else you want to add to my mumbo jumbo?
The only thing I want to add is that we are constantly dripping out new reviews, and a new one dropped onto YouTube today. There's an excellent review there of Orbit.Industries by Louise. Go and check it out. A very different kind of a game, I think, is maybe how we would describe that. Anton?
Indeed, yeah. Got to see the game running in action, and it's nice to have a full review on it. It's quite an in-depth one, so do give it a wee look on our YouTube. That is Nintendo Switch UK Podcasts on YouTube.
Nice. And with that, let's get on with this week's news.
Tell us that people want to know.
I'm going to start with one for me, I think. Tower Studios and KISS Publishing have announced Sociable Soccer for Nintendo Switch, a new arcade football game coming out November 2022. Anton, I know you're a massive football fan, so what's your take on this one?
I do love the sports ball, and this one is an old school sports ball. It seemingly was out on Apple Arcade at one point and then has made the jump to the Nintendo Switch. It appears to have at least two dimensions and balls. How about yourself, Alistair?
I mean, I do enjoy a good bit of sphere kicking as well, to be honest. It's definitely my favouritest of all the sporting activities to partake in and to observe with my eyeballs. In all honesty, it should be pretty good. Sensible Soccer was loved by everybody the world over, regardless of whether you like football. It was just a good, fun game. And when this one hit the Apple Arcade, again, everyone kind of loved it. So it's breaking out of his jail and coming to make people around the globe very, very happy. Hurrah! Mike, I can see your face is just, you're fizzing with excitement.
I mean, do you know what? I'm interested to play it. Let's put it that way. I think it's...
That's more muted than I expected.
Yeah, well, no. I have an Evercade and I have Sensible Soccer on the Evercade and it plays very well and it's great fun. I just hope that this plays... Having not played it on Apple Arcade, I really hope that this plays well. I think it will. It looks like it's got that fun factor, which I think FIFA sometimes loses, although there are some extra modes in FIFA which really do make it fun. I'm definitely interested. I want to see what kind of reaction it gets first. And I know that's muted for me, but I'm just being a realist. We'll see.
What I want to know is, does it have Roy Kent in it?
Roy Kent, was he in the Sensible Soccer?
No, he may have been in Ted Lasso, but he's still my favourite footballing character ever, and I want him to be in this. I want to play Roy Kent.
Still haven't watched that, but I will. It's supposed to be very, very good.
We need to get into that in the last call.
Okay, Spike Chunsoft have announced Research and Destroy for the Nintendo Switch. It's a new cel-shaded shooter. It's coming out on the 25th. That is tomorrow as we record. Anton, what's your take on this? Will you be researching and buying or researching and destroying?
I think I'll be sitting a little bit neutral for the moment. I think it does look like a good game. I like the verticality in the levels. The third person gameplay looks kind of nice and sharp. And I kind of like the co-op elements to it. It looks like a fun sort of title. And yeah, I think it looks fairly polished.
It's an unusual one. It got several sort of fan awards when it was demoed at, I can't remember what it was shown, E3 or somewhere like that. And that's always an encouraging sign. It's a weird looking game. It sort of looks like it belongs on the GameCube or something. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that actually in quite a good way. It's just using cell shading and it's all kind of retro in a way. The intriguing thing is they've described it as a strategy sort of shooter. I think the idea is you plan what you're going to do and then you run and gun, I think. But because nobody's really seen it properly playing, nobody has a clue actually how this game is going to work. So it has a lot of potential. It does look like a lot of fun. It's definitely not taking itself seriously. There's more tongue-in-cheek in this, or just in the trailer, than I've seen in a lot of games in a long time. It looks good. It looks good. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, it kind of sits somewhere weirdly between Borderlands, GameCube cel-shaded games, and Plants vs. Zombies. It's got a kind of weird mashup of them with maybe a bit of what was that comic game on the Mega Drive thrown in? That was the what was that one?
Comic Zone.
That's the one. I quite like the look of this. I've got to be honest. I think this is, it ticks a lot of boxes for me. I hope it's not too complicated when it comes to the setup of it. I really hope it's quite sort of intuitive, because that would be my only worry. But I love some of the weird things that happen in the sort of footage we've seen, like the grand pianos coming out of a portal out of the sky and crushing people, and, you know, flying on a skateboard and ridiculous things like that. It looks fun, and I think if it translates well to co-op, it could be the kind of game that you could play with friends. And I do think we're kind of still missing a shooter type game with friends, because we say all the time, we're not the best when it comes to shooters, but they are fun if you can get one that is fun, and this might just be it.
Yeah, I can see this being a game that you and I could sit down and play together, couch co-op, have a bit of fun, jump online, play with some other people. It could be the, dare I say it, could it be filling in for oh good lord, the name's going right in my head, Time Splitters. It has a similar vibe.
Yeah it does have. I mean, it's interesting, because obviously Time Splitters is one of the ones that you love and
adore.
But you're not really a shooter fan, so it's an interesting one. So yeah, I think this might sit like this for a lot of people. It's not going to necessarily be the people who play Call of Duty's favorite, but it's going to be people who like a casual game, that people that loved GoldenEye back in the day might check it out, that kind of thing. That's where I'm thinking this sits. But be interesting to see. It's coming out tomorrow, so we will start to see more and more reviews as that happens, and hopefully we'll get a chance to play it at some point too. Red Deer Games have announced P3 for the Nintendo Switch. It's a modern vertical shooter. There isn't a date just yet. So it's modern, but it's got a real kind of stylistic art design to it. It's sort of quite black and white, but then it's got the sort of dashes of color in it, and it seems quite fast paced, but it's like almost as if they've got it set on a CRT TV, Anton.
Yeah, it's quite sharp in its pixel based art style. It's got slight Downwell vibes in terms of its color palette and general kind of model design, and overall I'm quite intrigued by it. I like the balance between challenge and engaging quick gameplay. It doesn't look too hard, doesn't look too easy. And I also like, as a vertical shooter, it is using a full kind of 16x9 plane. There's quite a lot of them that try to stick to a 4x3. So I've actually recently ordered a Flip Grip, which will hopefully come within of the next 5 years of existence. And when that arrives, I'm very excited to try this out, because it will fill the Nintendo Switch's screen, which you can't say about all vertical shooters, sadly, because they do like their 4x3 classic gameplay, Al.
Yeah, and this one does look weirdly quite aesthetically good. I mean, as you say, it's grayscale and red. That's all you're playing with, but somehow they've managed to make it look quite enticing, and the amusing sort of bow on the screen to make it look, as Mike says, like a CRT glass screen. It's a lovely little touch. I mean, the game, from what we've seen, doesn't look like it offers really much new, with the exception of the control gimmick, which may be genius, it may be incredibly frustrating. You literally just have two buttons, one to go left, one to go right. That's it. If you're turning, you're shooting. If you're going in a straight line, you're not shooting. If you hold down both buttons at the same time, you do a super move. That's it. It's the ridiculously simple control system, which might be fantastic, but it does hint at being really difficult to master.
Yeah, I like the idea of a simple control system. I think that could be the touch that gets people playing. I think price is going to be the thing, you know, for this again. If it's well priced and it's cheap, and it's, you know, I would imagine, I don't think it's going to be an expensive game. I think it's going to be sub £10, I would imagine. Maybe.
I think it'll achieve. It's only 5 levels. It's not a big game.
Yeah. So as long as it's priced around that kind of level, I think it could be a gore. And it seems like one that you could pick up and play if you want a short burst of something. That's a good thing. Definitely a good thing. And I think if they keep it simple, even better, because then you can pick up and play without having that learning curve and then forgetting what you're doing when you don't play it. And so, yeah, it's growing on me, this one, I must admit. I hope it's, I hope it comes out and is well reviewed. CoatSync have announced Cloud Gardens for the Nintendo Switch. It's a game about purposely overgrowing plants. It's coming out on the 12th of May and it's $13.99. Quite a trippy kind of trailer, this, Al.
Trippy is one way of describing it. I mean, it's visually, it doesn't look like anything new. I mean, you're basically rotating around a fairly small square and doing stuff. So we've got lots and lots of games out there that do that. However, this one's unique catch is the fact that you're basically given an environment, you place objects and then make plants grow up around them. And the whole idea to progress is you've got to populate the scene and overgrow it with stuff. In theory, I should love this. It does look very, very tranquil, very, very peaceful. And I like games where you're kind of gardening and growing things. But this just really upsets me so much because I like gardens when they're nice and neat. I spend a lot of time in mine tidying things up. I like having nice cut grass. I like having plants just the way they're supposed to be. This, you're deliberately creating anarchy and it's upsetting me so much. I couldn't play this game. I can't make things just fall into apocalyptic just craziness and chaos. No, I can't do it, Anton. Please speak.
Ah, see, I saw this as very much a cam. I didn't see this as a chaos. It's, a post-apocalyptic world, and then you're rebreeding it with life. You're planting seeds strategically, and you're placing objects strategically to kind of envelop it with new life. And, I don't know. I really like this one. It seems quite chill and zen. It reminds me of Assembled with Care, which is another fantastic indie. The one thing I will say is it shouldn't be $13.99. I think it should be sub $7, even though I'm really keen on it. That's just, I think, too much to ask for what is primarily a quite simple concept.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think if I see this on sale for sub £5, I think I would jump on it. And I do like the premise. I think it's quite cool. But I don't think I'm going to pay $13.99 for it. And again, it's one of those games that you probably want to dip in and out of. It's quite relaxing, unless you're Al. And it's not necessarily one that I think I would spend hours and hours in a row on. But maybe that's just me.
Interestingly, it is the same price on Steam. It's been out on Steam for a while. It came out in September last year. And it's $13.99 on there too. So we're getting it at the same level as Steam, which is a rare occurrence. And I have to say, on Steam, it has overwhelmingly positive reviews. It is just beloved by apparently 1,433 people who've played it. That's not often you come across that. So I do wonder, actually, full price is not bad.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's maybe one of those games that you do just have to play, and once you play it, you really get the value out of it. Because a lot of these kind of games, they're not visually... I think visually this actually looks really good. It's not... don't get me wrong, I don't think it's badly designed or anything like that. I think it actually looks really nice. But it doesn't grab me, probably because I haven't got a concept of how you play it properly. Like, I don't have the hands-on experience. So I think I'll wait on this one, see what the reviews are like. And again, I'll be interested to see, because if they're as good as they have been on Steam, I might change my mind, and $39.99 might be a bargain. Nintendo have announced Sonic Spinball, Shining Force 2, and Space Harrier 2 for the Mega Drive Nintendo Switch Online collection, or the Genesis collection. Sonic Spinball is a kind of fun one. I think it was developed really quickly, if I remember, but I quite like it. I liked it in the first place anyway. It's fun and it's Sonic. And Space Harrier, the first one, was one of the first games I ever owned on the ZX Spectrum. So Space Harrier 2 is kind of fun, because I don't think I've ever played that. And Shining Force 2, I do remember Shining Force. I don't necessarily remember 2. But yeah, it's cool. I don't think it's going to make anyone rush out and get the expansion pack, but I think it's fun, Anton.
Yeah, these are pretty much classics all round. Space Harrier is a super great arcade game. Shining Force 2, I think, is in many ways a neglected turn-based tactical RPG, and not tactical, just RPG, that was, top-notch of the era. It was not like a kind of cheap throwaway game. It was a big, well-done RPG. And Sonic Spinball, as you alluded to, was developed within of 2 months for the holiday season. I'm just hoping that they got the European version on the service, because it was rushed so quickly. They accidentally put some placeholder music on the shelves with the American release. So hopefully we actually have the one that has the actual soundtrack.
I love that story. To be fair, I have never played any of these three games, but I have to say that Sonic Spinball does look quite good. It, actually, weirdly, Sonic Spinball looks like the kind of Sonic game I would actually enjoy, because it's basically, it's a mashup, as I gather, between like a platformer and pinball. Is that a good description of it, Mike?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's more pinball, I think, than mashup. Like, it's more pinball in that sense. There's another game on the Switch, a modern game, which has that similar mechanic of pinball and gameplay, and I have it, and I can't remember what it's called. Anton might remember. Is it ukulele? But it's like that kind of name. It's I'll find it for you.
Not ringing
a bell. I'll find it for you because it's actually really good. But yeah, I know what you're saying, and it's kind of different for a Sonic game, definitely. And at the time, it was different. It was kind of like, okay, well, where's this come from?
It's a perfect character for a pinball game. I mean, most of the time when they make pinball games, they're kind of wedging IPs in. It doesn't really work. But Sonic turning into a ball and flying around the level, that's kind of almost what he's designed for. It just looks like it works brilliantly. And I feel like I could kind of get into that and control it without the fear of a normal Sonic game where you don't know what's coming next and you know you're going to die in about half a second time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Anton, I was just going to mention it's Yoku's Island Express.
Ah, fabulous.
Well done. Good memory, Mike.
I found it online.
What is quite nice about it is, as a pinball game, because your pinball is sentient, you get a little bit of wiggle room where it's at. So you're still relying on the paddles, but your sentientness can just kind of nudge it all in any direction. And if you like a little bit of Sonic Spinball facts, I can't remember the exact details about it, but basically Sega hired a slave accidentally to make the game. Don't know how that worked, but it was a weird catacomb from history's time.
I'm pulling a face right now. I don't like that fact. That's not a nice fact. I only like nice things, Anton.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued as to what the actual story is now, but we have to look that one up for a last call, perhaps. Okay, next up, despite having a good employer reputation, workers' rights complained Nintendo is not very good to their contracted workers, with no benefits, low pay, lack of opportunities for progression. There's something about that doesn't surprise me at all.
I feel we need to be very careful what we say, because we don't want to end up in the wrong end of a lawsuit. How can we say about this? Yeah, I'm not surprised. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's a bit peculiar. There's very detailed summaries about what all that entails. And yeah, I think the one that caught me off guard was the fact that one of the benefits is the canteen. So you go and you might work with them for 3 years and sit at the same desk as somebody with quote unquote red badge, which is kind of red badges and then blue badges. So you have the red badge people that are basically full-time Nintendo employees, and then the contract workers. And yeah, it's a bit of a shame to be hearing all the things coming out, but I've always found bizarre just how many video game studios, I know it's because it saves some money, but how many studios will just have like a 10-20% contract base working. It's a bit of a
just
shame.
Just don't go on any away missions with any of the red badges. And that's going to go well over Anton's head. But never mind, it was a Star Trek joke, and a bad one at that. But yeah, I mean, look, it's Nintendo, and it would be what a great place to say you work. You know, you say you work for Nintendo. I mean, isn't that every kid's dream, really? So I hope that this has been exaggerated, or maybe it's an individual case, or perhaps it's not quite what it seems, and I guess we'll probably never know.
They should have taken the red badge.
Yeah, absolutely. Splatoon 3 has new gameplay trailer, and the release date has been announced of the 9th of September. Yeah, watch the trailer. It looks good, but it kind of just looks like more Splatoon, Al.
Yeah, it looks very splatty. I mean, basically what they showed us in the trailer was just Turf War. I mean, it's the old mode, so it wasn't really anything new. I mean, it looks nice and shiny, it's running very well, it looks like it's good fun. But actually, the one player and some of the other modes are probably more interesting to people at the moment because they're new and shiny. So, yeah, I think everyone's looking forward to this game. It's going to be big, and hopefully it gets supported in the same way that all the previous ones have, or the previous ones, I should say. It's only been two off the top of my head, given we're now getting three. But yeah, I think it'll be a big launch when it's eventually with us in September now.
Indeed, yeah. I think having a Splatoon game now that the Switch is a lot more mature than it was when Splatoon 1 will just lead to a much more successful product. And having a look at this gameplay, it's interesting. A lot of the initial content that they have been showing have been of this new, more expansive campaign set in the Splatlands, which is seemingly pushing the Splatoon 3 mythology further than it's ever been pushed, getting it out of the urban setting. This, as you have both alluded to, is very much kind of going and showing the core gameplay, the game mode everybody loves as a returning favourite, and then all the little micro tweaks and improvements that they made, which, to be honest, I think if you've never played a Splatoon, or even if you've played like 25, 50 hours of it, you're probably just going to miss half of that stuff. And to be honest, for myself, I really had to be focusing in on all the little improvements that they've made, making especially the new mini-map looks a lot more utilitarian for zipping around and jumping to teammates. And I think that's going to be the big thing of just people moving to the areas where the fight is a lot quicker. So I think that will make the gameplay a lot more aggressive and engaging. Similarly, the zipping around, there seems to be like a zip line kind of thing where you can kind of flick around the map, so it seems to be a lot more ways to move around quickly and to get into the heat of the action. So I expect this to be a lot more intense in the arena style game.
Yeah, and that's what kind of worries me slightly. I feel like this is going to be for the Splatoon experts, and I wonder if the extra new stuff for some of us who play it casually might just kind of push us away from it slightly. Is my instinct, but we'll see. And it looks good. I must admit, it does look really nice, as the last one did, but it seems a bit shinier and it seems to be running very well. So excited to see how it does go. It's the 9th of September, it's coming out, so not that long to wait if you've been waiting for a while. And now I've just seen myself superimposed into Al's background, looking very sad. You picked a point where I was looking really sad, Al.
Yeah, I mean, you look like it all the time, Mike.
Wow.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
Slightly harsh. Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack members can enjoy the Splatoon 2 Octo expansion DLC, the Nintendo Switch system, at no additional cost. I did buy that when it came out, actually. But don't pick my nose. But it's actually got quite a lot of content. It's pretty good. And that's another good thing to add. The only thing is, Anton, I kind of feel, if I'm being ultra critical, when you compare it to some of the other stuff that's on offer from the other systems, I feel like it's a bit of a... It's a little... Okay, two things. First of all, it's a very cheap way of doing it because that's been out for quite a while. And secondly, it's going to sell Splatoon 3 to lots of people. So it's not just like, here you go, here's something else. It's a clear marketing plan from Nintendo, which is obviously a good thing, but I think there could have been... We still want more, right?
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At the Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out the Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
I think definitely Sil would like more, but I find this an exciting move for where things are going, as this being the kind of a lot cheaper version of a Game Pass for DLC. You know, you can go out and still buy your big Nintendo games at launch day one, and then you buy this expansion pack to just have the full experience of all your existing games. And this being the first title, I hope of many, to kind of the back catalog to be added back into the expansion pack, makes me excited for the value they may add. And I think in a future direct, to step around the fact that we're still waiting for Breath of the Wild, I hope they add in, let's say, the Breath of the Wild expansion pack, the Luigi's Mansion expansion pack, and make this a lot more rich as just a huge collection of expansion packs for titles that we already love. So overall, it is sad that I can tell it's a little bit of selling us Splatoon 3. However, it is nice to get more value, and I hope if they do this with more of the back catalogue of DLC, we're going to have a lot of value coming to the expansion pack very soon, Al.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm the non-grumpy one here, actually. I have no issue with them using this as marketing. I actually think it's quite a good idea to do this as marketing. And the more content they put on there in the form of DLC, the more interesting a value proposition that actually becomes Expansion Pack Plus. We have to remember that they are charging a fraction of the price of some of the competitors out there. I mean, if you take something like... if you take Xbox Game Pass, that's what, £10, £11, £12 a month, something like that? 2-3 months of that, and you've basically got your Nintendo Switch for the whole year. And okay, you get very different games on there. But Nintendo is constantly adding to this, and it's a way of differentiating themselves. Sony and Microsoft are going at it, doing their thing, and they're basically setting up competing services. Nintendo, as always, is doing something different. They're using their subscription service as a way of getting the extra content for free, and actually that's maybe not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I can see both sides of it. I do still think we need more. I mean, I have the expansion pack, so I don't know what I'm talking about, but I would still like to see more added, but I think it's good. It's definitely good. I'm probably just slightly salty because I have this. I think that's probably what it is, to be honest.
No, it's because you're exercising too much today. You need to go have a shower.
But yeah, that's like me most days. Chrono Cross the Radical Dreamers Edition has been released due to high prices of the original. So this, well, we've seen a few of the Chrono Cross games, but what's the story behind this one, Anton?
Yeah, so kind of obviously there's multiple reasons that might motivate a remaster and re-release. And for the game director of this title, one of the kind of aspiring factors of that was the fact that the resale value of this game has just went through the roof over years. And, you know, that's kind of prohibitive to people that might want to finally play this game. And, you know, there's money clearly to be made because people are paying good money for it. So... that is partially the reason why we've got it today on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, it's such an amusing reason for making a port. I mean, literally, they asked the community out there, why do you ask us questions? What do you want to know about the game? And someone said, why are you doing it now? And the reply that came through from Twitter was basically, we found out people were selling it for crazy prices, so we decided, fine, go on then, we'll make it. We'll put it out there so people can get their hands on this game without being gouged. I mean, I quite like that.
yeah, that's quite clever, really, I think. Devolver Digital have showcased the art style for Return to Monkey Island. What is your take on the art style, Al?
I think I like it. I mean, it's obviously very different to the original, but the original was so long ago that we are in a completely different era. So trying to recreate the original pixel art kind of would feel almost disingenuous. They could do it, but it wouldn't. It would somehow just feel like it was cheating, whereas what they've gone for is a modern, old aesthetic. And I like the twist they put on it. It's kind of attractive. It's pulling me in. It makes me want to go and explore the world. It's bright, it's cheerful, it's quirky. It's got all the elements of the original Monkey Island, just modernised. And I'm very excited about this. What do you think, Anton?
I'm quite keen. I would say I really like the one, just how it looks in terms of lighting. It just looked quite atmospheric. However, I do like the practice that they've done is having shown this quite early and give us a flavor of what it's like. There's so many games where they show off the final product and people are like, I don't like how it looks, or I don't like how it's deviated. So we're in a position here, thankfully it's good looking, but if people were like, this looks rubbish, hopefully they've done it early enough that, you know, we can get a taste of it, give feedback, and it can be implemented properly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it looks good. I like the style they've gone down, the route they've gone down. I mean, Ron Gilbert, who's the writer behind it, is a bit of a legend when it comes to point and clicks. So I think this is going to be, great. I'm really excited about this one, and I'd imagine the Switch will be the destination of choice for all. A few people. Alright, next up, oh my goodness, it's getting really surreal now. It's starting to turn into the inception of this recording because Anton now has Al and me in his screen. It's really strange. But, you know, I'm just going to go with it because I don't know how you guys are doing doing it anyway, so I'm just going to leave you with it. Devolver Digital, no, I said that, a Super Mario Run clone called Supertan Marioner 3D Infinity World Adventures was released on the Xbox. The game has since been delisted. It looks absolutely terrible. I mean, I've watched the gameplay. It looks like a really bad game. But it's Mario, and it was on the Xbox. How on earth did they manage to do this, Anton?
Yeah, so technically, this isn't a piece of Xbox software. It has been released to the Microsoft Store as a UWP app, a Universal Windows app.
Right.
And so it runs like a cheap mobile game on a Windows computer, and then the Xbox can then also run that software. And it is
terrible. You know,
as you expect, terrible. I believe it got delisted, not due to it stealing the Mario model and likeness, but actually due to them stealing a bit of Super Mario 3D World artwork for their cover photo. Like title screen, and then it was stretched, so you know, I'm surprised that didn't save them from copyright, but sadly it did not. So I believe we are in a sad state where we can't spend free Great British pounds on this cult classic title.
It's all right, YouTube did. I mean, there's a couple of videos of people playing it on YouTube, and wow, I mean, it looks brilliant. It looks like the most amazing Mario game ever. Yeah, the Mario likeness is not bad. I mean, he looks a little bit like he's sort of lurching around. His arms don't really move. They can just hang loose at his side as he runs along and jumps from platform to platform in the most mundane, dull possible way. But, you know, I love the fact that this sneaked onto the Xbox. It's just so good.
It is so random. And it really is dreadful. But here we are. Nintendo have filed a patent for a new clothing deformation technology. What is this, Anton?
Yes, so this is a new technology that will basically make it far more efficient for Nintendo to put clothing onto kind of models that they make for their games. So rather than just putting a model on, a piece of clothing onto a video game model and then expecting it to work, it will actually go ahead and then contour and manipulate the model underneath the clothing to be a shape that rather less likely to clip through the clothing. So for instance, you know, if you have a nice big muscular character and then you put a shirt on them, it will then kind of compress their muscles and make it maybe a more smooth model underneath, and then maybe like tuck in, you know, let's say their hips, so it's a little bit more human-esque on the outside. However, there's not bits that can poke out when the character moves, so it seems like some good technology.
I mean, it does, but I mean, it surprises me that this doesn't exist, because I can't remember the last time I saw clothes merging with or disappearing with a character. It's something that used to be quite prevalent and common back in sort of the early days of 3D. And okay, as things got more and more complicated, that kind of went away, so I don't understand really why Nintendo has launched this now. I mean, can you guys remember the last time you saw clothes merging with or disappearing into a character? Half the time these days, they look like they're actually entirely separate and properly floating around and doing their own thing, like properly clothes, to be honest.
I mean, Anton's maybe got more examples, but I can't think of any.
Yeah, so I believe the rationale is that's kind of all done by working around. So it's less so that the clothes they have inherently don't no clip through. They're kind of having to go through and then manipulate the clothes so it doesn't. And, you know, I think kind of thinking of relatively recent titles like Cyberpunk, and I believe a bunch of the Souls games run into it from time to time. But the kind of goal of this would, rather than having to work around the limitations to prevent that from happening, it would be able to have this kind of core technology that stops this from happening. So rather than having to, you know, make a boat and then patch it so water doesn't go in, this would just be getting a hull off the shelf and then knowing that the water won't go inside it regardless.
Okay, so yeah,
cool.
Future proofing in some ways, I guess. Okay, it is time now for Turbo Mode.
Yes.
So if you don't know what Turbo Mode is, it's a chance for me to fire through a bunch of stories. Then we'll come to both Anton and Al and get their opinions on the ones they want to talk about. And they don't have to talk about any of them, or they can talk about all of them as long as they don't take forever. So we're gonna fire through this week's Turbo Mode stories, starting with Sonic. Sonic Origins has been formally unveiled. It features Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Sonic 3 and Knuckles. And Sonic CD is coming out on the 23rd of June. New Nintendo Sports advert features professional tennis player Leighton Hewitt and his son. You can now rent Nintendo Switch docks in Japanese Universal hotels. The Nintendo Classic Mini SNES is the best-selling micro console. Devolver Digital takes shots at Sonic Origins version's pricing list. A Nintendo Switch firmware update version 14.1.1 has been released. It features stability improvements, unknown web browser update, and updated bad word list. Shadowrun Trilogy has a release date of the 21st of June. Coca-Cola have released a special edition Super Nintendo World designed cans in Japan. I can never remember how to pronounce this. Kyo.
K-O.
K-O the Kangaroo gets a new trailer and release date of 27th of May. Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga is the biggest launch in Lego game history. Moon Knight and Mr. Knight have joined Fortnite. That's a lot of knights. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge will be getting a European physical release courtesy of Merge Games Limited, who are a UK-based company. And Splatoon 3 will have one version worldwide. Nintendo will not be shipping individual versions for North America, Europe, Oceania and Japan like they did for Splatoon 1 and 2. Anton, what would you like to talk about from those, if any?
Of course, and naturally I'll gravitate towards the Sonic Collection, Sonic Origins. And overall, I am relatively mixed on this collection. The games have been built up from the ground up. Brand new fresh code done by the Taxman, which is a famous hacker from back in the day that built their own engine to, you know, make your own Sonic fan games, and then has been hired by Sega to, I believe, offer help on Sonic Mania itself, and generally just handled some of the mobile ports and, you know, has experience working on these games inside and out. So it'll be a fantastic remaster of all of these games. Especially lovely to see Sonic 3 and Knuckles getting done as well. However, you know, these games that have been remastered, 1 and 2, which have had the Taxman treatment, have been like £4 on mobile, and this collection will be going for £33, which I think, especially compared to Sonic Mania, which sold for $17.99, I think is a lot to ask. They've done a nice job adding in cutscenes and challenges and achievements for this. However, I do feel like for that £33, it's a little bit much to ask. I would have loved them to have went ahead and added in, let's say, the Sega Game Gear and other spin-off titles such as Knuckles Chaotix, not in the remastered state, but maybe as, let's say, rewards for completing challenges or just as additional bonus content to help add a little bit of additional value to this collection. The games that they've put together here in the remaster that they've done does look fantastic, but I wish they'd went a little bit further adding value. And then the fact that there are just 5 different versions of this games with double, as we've mentioned, Devolver Digital, taking shots, showing off their own games that come in single versions. It does seem like a little bit money hungry in that way. So happy, but underwhelmed. And overall, Kazoo the Kangaroo looks lovely. I like the kangaroo. How about yourself, Alistair?
I have to say, Kill the Kangaroo does look pretty good. I mean, that's an older franchise that disappeared back in 2005. I think this is the first time it's been rebooted since then. And it does look like a good old-fashioned platformer, a 3D platformer, and they always have a special place in my heart. Very thrilled to hear that the Skywalker Saga, the LEGO Star Wars Skywalker Saga, has been their biggest launch to date, because it does look like an absolutely epic game. I am psyched we're going to get a physical of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because, you know, it's the Turtles and I prefer physical games. Oddly, my favourite story here is the Coca-Cola bottles that have been released in Japan. I mean, I don't know why I like that so much. I just do. They're really pleasing. They've basically just released a whole bottle that's wrapped in red plastic with a white bottom, like, world of Super Nintendo Land and the world of Super Nintendo on it. It's really, really simple, but for some reason, I absolutely adore these. I want to go to Japan and pick one of these up. Yeah. They're just make me happy.
We can state Universal and rent a dock as well for the Switch. I like that story too. And I think, you know, I probably will be going to Japan at some point work-wise, and definitely I'll be making the trip to the theme parks because there are some pretty epic ones there. And yeah, it's cool. I must admit, I do like the Coca-Cola story as well. I agree with you, Anton, on the Sonic games. I was quite excited to see how they look. I think they're looking, from what I've seen, they look like they're going to be really good. I think they will be strong, but it's a lot of money to ask, and I don't see me paying that for it.
Paying what? I mean, do you know how much you're paying? It's so confusing.
£33, isn't it?
Well, have you looked at the chart? The pricing chart has the five different versions of it. They've all got different things in them, and they cost between, it was about $35 and, I don't know, off the top of my head, it's like $55, $65. It's so confusing, which is why I liked it when Devolver Digital came out with their table, which had five versions of their game along the top. They were all the same game. Five categories down the side, and they just had a tick in every single column, so no matter which game and which extra you're looking for, it was in all of theirs. Sega's table to price a game is just, it's just so stupid.
Yeah.
Go look it up. It's just dumb.
I mean, yeah, anything that complicates things needlessly is probably not going to help sell things. So yeah, probably a bit of a mistake there, but certainly lots to talk about this week in terms of the Turbo Mode stories. And yeah, pretty much the ones you picked were probably the ones I would have talked about as well. Skywalker Saga, looking forward to playing that. Definitely looks wonderful, as does Shredder's Revenge. And like you, I'm happy that we're going to get physical in some sort of sense of it as well. So that'll be one I will be looking to get. It is time for this week's rumours.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
Okay, just the one big rumour this week, and that is that legendary leaker Emily Rogers has shared Nintendo have tested multiple N64 games for Game Boy connectivity back in September 2021. I talked about Pokemon Stadium being one of those potential games. That's what Emily Rogers said. We've speculated for a long time about the Game Boy games coming to, or Game Boy Color games coming. We had a story about that last week as well. And then you've got the ones with the connectivity. So if I remember, it was like was it a cart that you could then play Game Boy games? Was that how it worked, Anton, originally back in the day?
I believe it was an adapter that went into the bottom of the N64 controller and then connected to your Game Boy via a link cable. But yeah, it is an interesting timing to hear this rumor kind of come to the forefront, because I recall, I think it was last week when Mario Golf came out, if not the week before, and people on Reddit and Twitter were going ahead and either unlocking all of the characters or using a cheat code to unlock all of the characters in Mario Golf. However, they were left with two empty boxes, and people were like, why are these boxes empty? I've either used the code or done everything I can be, or I'm looking at guides and there's no kind of clear evidence of how I was meant to unlock these. And the truth was that, you know, there was Mario Golf on the Game Boy Color, and you'd use that, and then that would allow you to basically transfer over your characters. Nintendo couldn't just do that for you and give you the characters there, because Mario Golf was a little bit more like an RPG, so they had stats, and that would affect how they played in the N64 game, so it needed to be a genuine save to move over. And due to that, there was nothing. And now that this rumors came out a week later, it's like, could we see, you know, it get that feature come back? It would be lovely, as this is a feature that has not been attempted either with the Wii or Wii U emulation, and it would kind of show up the previous virtual console attempts.
I love this story. I think that's really cool. And I mean, it makes sense, actually, because I was trying to remember back in the days when Pokemon Stadium first came out, whether you could connect it to your Game Boy, and I suspect you probably could. I'd forgotten all about that, to be honest, but it would make a lot of sense if you were able to play some of these games on an emulator on the Switch and then just carry your saves over, link them in. The difficult thing for Nintendo to do, technically, that is not an easy thing to do, but it would be brilliant if they could make that move work.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I mean, I think the thing for me is just the opportunity to try things that maybe have kind of been forgotten, times forgotten about them. And the Switch, as I've mentioned many times, I think is one of the best retro machines you can buy, because there's so much great stuff that you can get for it. So I'm all for this.
Yeah, and what's quite nice about it is how you often beat piracy, and I think the music streaming has been a perfect example of it, and Netflix, when it did have a kind of unified library before it became such a fragmented space, is you make it more convenient. And currently, there's not any convenient way or realistic way to do this in terms of emulation, or the original hardware is either a lot more expensive and probably harder if you don't have a link cable. So what they're doing here would be making the most convenient option, counteracting piracy, which in a loose way for people that want this full experience.
Yeah, a bit of preservation, retro preservation. I like it. That brings us to the end of the rumours. There was just the big one this week. I still maintain that we're going to see a direct at some point this year. No, that's a bit vague. I still think we'll see it in June, but I don't think it'll be me. But anyway, we'll know. There's no point in talking about that because we talk about that every second week. It is time for this week's quiz.
I have so many questions.
It sure is. We're back. Huzzah. Well, I mean, I'm back. I know you guys didn't do one 2 weeks ago because I actually listened to that episode. I'm going to presume you didn't do one last week because, you know, how would that work?
We did not.
Didn't think so. All right, well, when we left, or when I left, it was Anton 4, Mike 3. You're nipping at Anton's heels. I wonder if you can catch up with him.
Probably not, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, well, I like the, I was going to say the confidence. That wasn't really confidence.
No.
It was the right attitude, though.
Yeah, it was effort.
Yeah, there was enthusiasm there. All right, let's just jump straight in. Our first game is a 1997 racing game.
Virtua Racing.
It is not.
Gran Turismo.
Again, it is not. It did sell 4.8 million copies, though. This is a big game.
Colin McRae Rally.
It is not.
Ridge Racer.
Again, it is not. It was remade in 2007 and released on the DS.
Driver.
No.
Diddy Kong Racing.
Ding, ding, ding. Out of curiosity, have either of you looked at the Discord in the last couple of hours? Because this is pretty much the only topic they've been talking about.
Oh, I have not. Neither have I. Very rude.
I wrote this quiz and then it came up and it's like, oh gosh darn it.
No, I hadn't read it. Unfortunately for me.
I know. And, one of you could have got a very easy win there. I hadn't realised that this game had such an interesting development cycle. It was originally designed as, as a strategy game. And then it moved over into being a different kind of racing game. It was Pro-Am 64, which is, I think, a sequel to maybe a NES game. And it was only the last minute when Banjo-Kazooie got delayed. They went, oh no, we've got a big hole in our lineup. Pro-Am's not a strong enough IP. What can we do? Let's fly in Diddy Kong and turn this into Diddy Kong Racing. And off they went. History. It became such a great racing game. Right up there, probably as loved, if not more, than Mario Kart 64. It's up there as the pinnacle of one of the best kart racers ever. Probably that, and what's your Sonic one that you guys raped?
Sonic All-Star Racing.
Oh yeah, All-Star Racing, yeah.
All-Star Racing, yeah. The two of them and Mario Kart, that's like your pinnacle. And it's kind of sad, the fact that Diddy Kong Racing was 1997, and it's still not really been, in my opinion, bettered. There's so many more opportunities, but no one has really come close to it.
Wow, I can't believe, one, you're discrediting my boy Crash. I know you never played him, but he did a good racing game in the 90s, and then it got remade.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Fair enough.
The only thing with Crash is the rubber banding is a bit severe, so that you can be miles ahead and then suddenly you're not. And actually, it seems to go from way too easy to way too hard, but it is a great game. I mean, I must admit, and it's got some really cool features. So yeah, I would agree with you on that one, Anton. But yeah, interesting. Well done, Anton. Not surprised that you got that one before me, but well done.
All right, well, let's see if either of you gets this next one. It's a 2012 racing game. That's all I'm going to give you to begin with.
Racing games.
Is it Grid Autosport?
No.
Is it Midnight Club?
No. It was released on Windows, PS3 and Xbox 360 initially, with a port coming to the Wii U in 2014 that had the subtitle Powered Up Edition.
Micro Machines?
Nope.
Powered Up, you say?
Anton's like, I've got to think, what game is, I've got all the Wii U games, what game is this?
Yeah, I could look over and it'd possibly be on there.
You can't, you're in Mike's studio, we've established this already at the beginning of the episode.
The lore, I can't stray from the lore, Loremaster.
Give me a game, any game.
Let's just go for Team Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Nope. It was developed and published by Codemasters, though.
I was close to that. Oh. I commissioned this game.
F1 Baby Cars Powered Up.
You are ridiculously close, but you've not given me the right name.
F1 All-Stars Powered Up.
Very, very close. I'm just going to keep going because I quite like this one, and it's amusing watching you guys squirm. Single-player, multiplayer kart racer. Utilizes a very famous brand.
F1 All-Stars Kart Racer.
Nope. So close.
F1 All-Stars Mini Powered Up.
Nope. It uses cartoon versions of real sports personalities and teams from a 2012 season. Oh, you guys are going to hate me. You're both so painfully close to it. I'm probably going to give Anton the point, but I'm just stringing this out for fun. Unless Mike hits the actual name.
F1 All-Stars Fun.
Nope.
F1 Tiny Toons Powered Up.
Nope. All right, the last one. Weapons damage forces the driver into the pit to repair their cars to maintain their top speed. Just give me one more random guess. And if you get it in the nail, Mike, you get the point. If not, it's going to Anton.
F1 Speed Chase.
Nope.
F1 Race.
Ooh, Stars. Yes, F1 Race Stars. Powered he got up. The name.
I can see the cover. I said All Stars.
You were both so close.
Actually, one of the few Wii U games I've not got, so I need to get on that one.
I did have it on the 360. It was not a good game. It was stupid and fun, but it wasn't good. Okay.
I have picked up a lot of those not good Wii U games.
Well, that puts Anton 5-3. Let's just do the last round anyway, just for funsies.
Please.
Do I make Mike go first on this one?
I mean, yes. It matters not now, so...
It matters either. Not, but yeah, I'll make you go first. What year was the original Plants vs. Zombies released on Windows and Mac? This is before it got to mobile. It was on Windows and Mac in what year?
Oh, wow, okay. Before it got to mobile. I'm going to say it got to mobile quite early on, so I'm going to say 2007.
Anton?
2008.
Anton's got the hat trick. 2009.
Well. I give up. Back to the drawing
it's
board.
It's not been your night.
Yeah. No.
I mean, next week, Mike. Next week.
Absolutely. It's only 5-3. It's only two in it. I'm okay with that. I am fine with that. But yeah, well done, Anton. Three good answers again. I can see the F-Stars... F1 Star Racer cover. I can still see it. And I knew as soon as Anton suggested it was that, I could see it, and I just couldn't remember. All Stars was all I could think of, but it's not that. Well done, Anton. We are going to be back in a week's time with another episode. And in the meantime, remember, check out the website nsukp.co.uk. We're also on the Twitter, and we're on the Facebook and the YouTube, Alistair.
We are, yes. We're also on the good old-fashioned email podcast@nsukp.co.uk. And if anyone does want to follow us on Twitter and you aren't already, it's @nsukpodcast. Go find us. We're on all the socials. Google will help you.
And
absolutely.
What do you want to add, Anton? Sorry, I was about to say that and then you had already adding, so you carry on.
Sorry, do excuse me.
No, it's my
nevertheless,
fault.
Thank you very much for listening. As we've mentioned, support on the Patreon is always lovely. We had a lovely new NES Patreon, as we mentioned. We do tons of bonus shows like Last Call, the prequel, Roundup, and of course the upcoming Mug Club is very exciting. So there's tons of exciting stuff there. And of course the lovely Discord community, which could have gave us hints in this week's quiz, but
we didn't check.
We didn't read. I don't know how it reads. Turns out it's not very useful for me.
But you still won. That is it. We will be back next week. Have a good week. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Arvath.